Today, we are talking Knock.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Talkin' Knock. I am your host, Tristan, joined by the corn caper himself, Peyton. How are you doing today, Peyton?
Excuse me, I'm no longer a corn caper. I am a group Iron Man caper.
Yes, Peyton has been playing a lot of RuneScape lately because they released some game mode.
I love wasting my life on a 20-year-old kid's MMO, honestly.
Yeah, for real, dude. The game's been out for like 20-something years.
It's been way too long.
Yeah, it needs to die. Anyway, today we are again in Knock 1 by Olivier Revenue and Eric Nyden. A little bit of housekeeping before we get into it. We're going to be doing two episodes this week since I was stuck on a work trip last week and was unable to record or edit or do any of that jazz. And we have social media, so please, again, check us out. The link is in the description of the podcast. It's talkin.knock without the G on basically everything except Facebook, because Facebook is the devil. Moving on, our first article today is Hit Dice Are Meant to Be Rolled by Eric Nyden, one of the mushmen themselves. So what did you think of this one, like, first thoughts?
Well, I guess my first thoughts are that for those of you who don't know, the article is mostly referencing him playing a game that I don't remember the name of, where he really wants to, instead of having like the RNG around, you know, your damage, instead that be based around your HP. And while I think that works in like the game that he tried to base all of his arguments off of, where the damage is a static and set number, it'd be fine. But trying to implement this into a D&D or OSR game where the damage is also random probably isn't a good idea.
Well, I think what he's actually saying is he's talking about using this exactly for D&D and OSR games. But he's talking about using this system instead of the randomized HP that you're getting from hit die from that stuff. So normally you take like your third level BX thief and you have 3d4 hit die, you roll them together and you get 9 HP or something like that, or 10 or 8 or 7 or whatever. And I think he's saying kind of get rid of that and use those hit dice, the actual 3d4, for different mechanics. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I like I said, I get where he's coming from, and I just, maybe we'll agree to disagree here. I don't think that's good in a dice-like game like D&D.
Yeah, I could see that. I think I like the way that some of them I really like. I really agree with the soak mechanic or the stamina one, which we'll get into in a second here, but some of them I think they seemed a little bit overly complex to the point where it's like, okay, well now we need to think about how to even get damage done. But I guess it's just easier for us to jump in. So he posits a few alternate hit dice methods for his games. There are five, I think, 4 or 5. And the first one is hit dice as a soak mechanic. So basically every time you're hit, you must beat the damage with a roll of your hit dice. So say you get hit for 6 damage and you've got a d8 for your hit dice, you'd have to roll 6, 7, or 8. Otherwise you get a wound, which can be just some type of penalty like being dazed, blinded, off balance, out of breath, something like that. And this one, I kind of liked this one. I liked the idea of not having to track HP specifically and just tracking, okay, am I a hardy enough person to kind of shrug off this, or is it going to actually wound me?
I guess I have some disagreements with that, although they're also kind of tied into the next point, which is hit dice as a free pool. So if you want, I guess also you explain that one too, since I feel like that kind of just builds on top of the first one.
Why don't you go ahead? If you've got some stuff that you want to talk about with it, go for it.
Well, hit dice as a free pool is basically the previous subheader, which is using them as a soak mechanic, except you can use multiple dice if you want to try and combat higher damage numbers, which introduces a risk-reward mechanic of, you know, do I risk multiple hit dice to have a better chance of beating their damage and not coming out with a wound, right? Just napkin mathing some results. Say, for example, you have a character with 5d12 hit die, right?
Yeah.
And that would be 5th level, and you get whacked to 30, which, well, high isn't necessarily uncommon for that level, right?
Yeah.
So you would have to risk literally all of your hit die just to be able to have your average roll be the damage number you need to beat.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what he talks about a little bit, because he talks about kind of going for more of a a grimdark way of looking at it. So it is like, hey, if you're taking some hits, you're taking some hits. Like 30 damage is a lot. And I think too, most of the damage for these games that he's talking about, especially related around OSR games, you have less health or less damage dealing weapons. Like most BX clones, all weapons do like a D6. So a D6 of damage is a lot of damage. So I think it's kind of built off that, but he does talk about, we'll get into it at the end, he talks about it being a sliding scale to kind of build it around what type of game you want it to be. So I definitely get what you're saying. I get where you're coming from. One part I didn't like about the free pool one specifically was his fixed damage rate thing that he does, which you have to for the free pool, but also I'm not a big fan of that. I think it takes you way away from the source material, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that kind of was playing into my thing earlier. We're like, I'm sure this thing works in a type of setting where the damage is static and fixed, but in a D&D or OSR type game, that just isn't, I guess it's just incompatible with how the rules work.
Exactly. I think the next one, the hit dice is stamina, which basically is saying, hey, you've got these hit dice, they're a part of your character. Why not be able to spend those to kind of show a burst of stamina or burst of speed, something like that? And he even says, hell, you could spend more than one of them if you really wanted to make some type of save, and that fighting classes can spend their hit dice to add to damage. I really like that mechanic, mostly because, I mean, we're used to DCC, which I'm sure everybody knows at this point, where you can spend so many parts of your character to do different things. And I think that this kind of just adds right into it.
Yeah, I really agree with this one. I guess mostly as seeing it as something separate from the first two.
Yeah.
One thing that I guess I want to add on to, which I'm sure that he kind of implies here, even though it isn't outright stated, is when someone like a warrior or a barbarian wants to use their hit points or hit die as stamina for an attack, I would make them, at least for balance reasons, like say declare whether they're going to use the stamina hit die before or after they make the attack.
Yeah, agreed. And I think with this one, you've got to be very upfront about when they get them back. Because I know for me, these hit dice can be a pretty big dice. Like a warrior in DCC is a D12. That's a pretty significant boost that you could add on there. And I think how I would have it done is each level, you only get those hit dice. So say you're level 5, from level 5 until you hit level 6, you've only got 5 hit dice to use. And that way it kind of adds into the use it or lose it kind of mentality, while also not being something that you can just throw out there all the time and it actually has some weight to it.
I feel like I would implement something like that if I was just taking this specific stamina thing on its own. But if I were taking this on top of the hit dice as a free pool, I feel like the XP would need to be adjusted in a way so that there's less time between levels, because I just don't feel like having stamina
on top of it being your
HP system is too much.
No. I would just have it be stamina. I'm talking about them each individually at this point, so I agree.
Yeah, that's what I do too then.
The risk dice one, I didn't quite understand, probably because it's related to his game that he made, but I've not really run into anything like this. I think I'm going to do my best to explain it, but basically each attack made towards you, you roll it in opposition to the damage each time you get hit. If you fail, you get the penalty as talked about with like the soak mechanic or something like that. But if you roll a 1 to 3, your dice is stepped down to the smaller type. So like if you've got a D12, it becomes a D10, which becomes a D8 and blah, 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 down to D4. And then if you roll a 1 to 3 on a D4, he says you're out. What did you think he meant you die at that point?
Yeah, I think he meant you died. I guess you want me to try and add on top of what you were saying?
Yeah, go for it. Because I was genuinely a little bit confused by this one.
To me, reading this, it felt thematically like it's just a more punishing and grimdark version of hit dice as a soak mechanic. And that, like, if say, for example, you have 5d12, you know, you would still use those as your hit dice. However, your hit dice would only go down a level, or aka quote unquote losing hit dice, if you were to roll 1 to 3.
Okay, yeah, okay, that makes more sense. I get that. So his last kind of topic before he moves on, also these were all from the wrist dice was from his game Macchiato Monsters, which I've talked about in a past episode, which seems like a cute little game that seems to be doing pretty well. I've seen it on a few things. I'll put the link in the description. His last kind of topic he talks about before he finishes out this article is that it's all a sliding scale. So he basically says, hey, if you want it to work that way, you can, or you can make it a little bit more heroic and let them recover hit dice easier or be gone forever kind of thing, which can make it much more grimdark and more of like a, oh my god, we're all going to die at some point kind of thing. And I like that he put that in there because it's good to kind of give readers an example of, hey, you can make this easier or you can make it harder and just use it however you kind of want to in your game.
Yeah, I agree with all the examples he gives in this, which one of them might be, you know,
like magical healing in 5th edition, where a full night's rest brings back half the maximum number of hit dice or something like that, make it harder so a full night's rest gives you one back.
Yeah, the reason I bring that up is because I agree with all of these points that he makes about it being a sliding scale, but only because they're generic enough that they can also fit into a system where your HP is fixed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In this specific case, he is kind of more going into the HP like feeling, I think. I agree for the most part.
Approaching this article, it feels like in order to understand most of it, you have to be in the mindset that this can work. And I guess when you're like me and like you approach it from the mindset of, hey, like, Your HP is something pretty important to your character. You know, if you lose it, you die. Or, you know, you get horribly scarred or something like that. So to me, when you have a system that's playing it like fast and loose, and, you know, you want to be grimdark and something like that, there needs to be a way for you to have agency over something as important as your hit dice. And I don't think that rolling your dice and hoping you roll high enough is just something that fits that bill.
Yeah, I could see where you're coming from. Especially, I think that I was more open to this as an idea because I have played a little bit more like weird OSR games where I'm used to getting taken outside of that like standard, not standardized, but like having HP as an idea, because I've kind of done anything from, oh, your each individual appendage has its own hit points, basically, to stuff like this where it is a hit dice and you're rolling against what the opponent is doing. So I think that I was a little bit more open to this, but I definitely get what you're saying about coming in from strictly having the HP example. You're like, why would I want to do that? Because this just seems kind of like extra steps to what I already do.
Yeah, and you know, there are people out there who speedrun the entire Soulsborne video game series without getting hit, right? There are always going to be masochists who love this whole like high risk, high reward stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like for the average player, if you introduce a system where whether they die or not is dependent upon RNG more than they're used to, it's just going to lead them to turtle up and play in a more defensive and less interesting way.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. And something I just realized I forgot to mention was the art for this one is by Holbein the Younger, who was a old-timey kind of artist, and I can link to his Wikipedia here. I'm assuming that's who they're referencing because I found no other. Like, I was a little bit worried that it was like kind of like Nobok, where that's actually Olivier using like a pen name, basically, but from what I understood, it's actually an old artist, and they kind of were inspired by his art and put it into this publication, which makes sense to me. But it's cool. It's really cool to me. I love the art.
I love the art. I love the splashes on the title page. It's just, you know, like the rest of Nock fits in pretty well.
Yeah, all that graphic design really is interesting to me. They do a really good job. So our second one is also, again, by Eric, kind of. So this one was it's called 20 Gunpowders, and it's basically just a table of exactly what it sounds like, 20 Gunpowders. And it was created through Gygaxian Democracy, which basically just means group thought on how to make something for one of your RPG games. At this point, he was doing it through Google+, which was where everything for RPGs really used to be. The community was like really, really strong on there, and I feel like it was one of the only groups that really succeeded well on Google+ before it sadly shut down.
You say sadly. I'm okay with it.
That's fair. Yeah. I know that RPGs and the OSR movement and stuff like that really used it for quite a while, and there were different groups that had all of these pinned resources and everything, and Nock kind of came from that a little bit because they kind of compiled all of those things that were in Google+ over the ages. But basically what this is this was written by a good 6 people, so we've got Gerhardt, oh god, I'm going to apologize in advance because all of these names are very hard. Gerhardt Seidofine, I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. We got Chris Schorb, Max Vanderhayden, Luca Reyes, Jens Larsen, and Guillaume Janté. Oh, and also, the final one, number 20, is just credited to Phil.
The hardest name on the list to pronounce, if you ask me.
Exactly, but the nice part about this is They did really nice color. The whole table is just color-coded, basically, so it's really easy to tell what description belongs to each gunpowder. And yeah, it's just 20 fun gunpowders. So what is your favorite on there?
Oh, having to pick one favorite, I gotta say it would probably number 14.
That's mine too.
Non-linear powder, which the description is that it's made with crystals normally used by planeswalking magicians. When used, roll d6 to know when the bang is heard. 1 to 3, when you shoot is normal. 4, at a time of your choosing, but in the same place. 5, at the time of the referee's choosing, but at the location you are at the time. And 6, just before the shot. So your target will be able to partially dodge. Roll with disadvantage.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I thought that would add to a lot of fun experiences in combat. And I think there's a few on here where I'm like, if the player knows what this is, they're not going to use it. But this is one where I think the risk and the reward would make it so that, I mean, my players at least would be like, hell yeah, let's use this. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, you know, you just, everyone in the party put up a firing line against a bunch of enemies and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's really all I had to say about this. I thought it was great. I thought it was a cute little idea. And I normally don't use gunpowders in my games, but I think that if I was, I would definitely use these.
Yeah, it does a very good job of keeping the gunpowders, you know, early Renaissance period, you know, where it was just starting to be used, but not really. So it kind of still fits in with the whole D&D aesthetic.
Yeah, and mixing just fun, weird magic into it, because I'm always down for the gonzo.
Who doesn't love a little steampunk aesthetic, you know?
So our last article that we're going to talk about today is Naming My Game by Ben Milton, who we've talked about before. He's Questing Beast on YouTube. And this article is basically about why he likes using the term adventure game for his favorite stories. And this one I was a little bit iffy on. I know you had some pretty strong feelings on it too, so I'll go ahead and let you jump into yours first.
Yeah, well, the entire premise of the article is just that, you know, we really need to categorize our OSR games because they're so different. And so that, you know, if someone wants to look up the resources for a specific OSR game, they don't have to drag through, you know, literally everything. Which, I guess, I agree, Mr. Ben Milton, with where you're coming from, and I'm sure you're a great guy. However, I partially work in like IT software, you know, just general computer stuff. And there's this kind of this like long running joke where, you know, like if there's 14 standards for something and it's all confusing and hectic, some guy will come along and say, I'm going to make a new standard. It is going to be compatible with everything else. It's going to have all of the good things of what I like, and all the bad things are going to be thrown out. And then 3 months down the line when it gets implemented, the reality is that we now have 15 standards.
Yeah, I could see where you're coming from, especially with this, because he talks about not liking the three phrases. The three that he gives an example are OSR game, D&D, and DIY game. He says OSR basically implies compatibility with BX. This one I'm going to give him a pass on because I feel like this was written before OSR kind of evolved into what it is now, where it's more an idea behind the game rather than implying compatibility, whereas when it first started, it definitely kind of did imply that compatibility. The second one is D&D, which he says is too imprecise and doesn't exactly capture the kind of game he wants, which I get it, but I don't think that D&D is any less precise than just saying adventure game in general.
Yeah, that's one of my issues with the whole D&D example, is that I can get it if you weren't using the term adventure game as a replacement.
Exactly. And then the final one is DIY game, which I personally have not heard, but I'm sure it is something that either used to be something that people said more, or I just have completely missed it. And he's basically just saying that, hey, there's lots of people hacking games. Saying that you like DIY games doesn't mean you're going to like all hacked systems. And then he says that adventure game is the one that he likes because it implies X, Y, and Z. It's not really important to our discussion what X, Y, and Z is. But I think that this would be a really good opinion piece if all he said was, hey, this is why I say that I like adventure games, and that's it. And I would completely be fine with it. I'd say, yeah, like, I think that I would also fall into that category. And I don't know that I just like OSR games. I just like D&D. I just like DIY games. It's the feeling of adventure that comes from it. Because RPGs, I do like RPGs, but also this adventure game thing is something that I think is better. But then he goes on to the end, basically says that a good name goes a long way and there needs to be a clear label for OSR. And that's where I start to disagree with him, because I do not think that adventure game is any more clear than OSR.
Yeah, that's where a lot of my issues with the article came in. Because, you know, even throwing the whole, like, just making another standard thing aside, I can still agree with, you know, like, wanting something else to subcategorize yourself in for easier access to information. However, him using the term adventure game and then trying to say that that is a clear label, I don't know about you, but, like, I have heard adventure game from tabletop games to video games to literally everything. It's about the least clear just word you can use to describe what you're going for.
I think it's fantastic to kind of encapsulate everything going on with the tabletop scene. I think it's fantastic for saying, like, hey, D&D, OSR games, narrative games, all of those together fit under the umbrella of adventure games. And I think it's great to say, hey, I think that we should kind of, instead of saying tabletop role-playing games every time, we should say, hey, these are adventure games. And I'm totally in agreement for that. And I think this also, I think this article in general just kind of is dated in a little bit, just because I feel like OSR is kind of really narrowed in on what it means, and it's going more towards the idea of, like, the feel of that gritty, high risk, high reward kind of mindset in a game, and the others have kind of split into their own thing as well. So I think that's really what it comes down to at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree with it. I think that maybe adventure game should be used as either, like, you know, OSR dash adventure game, or adventure game gets put as the umbrella for all tabletop games. But, you know, you just can't have your cake and eat it too and have it be used in both contexts.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a pretty fair assertion. So we have a listener question this week. I know we didn't have one last week because we talked with Will about the War for Ryuba. But this week we've got a question from Rose, who asks, to me, it seems that every box for OSR is checked for DCC, and I've noticed that you guys call it DCC adjacent. So would you mind elaborating on why you feel it's not fully OSR? I think that I could go either way on it. To me, DCC is not fully OSR because it's more based on the 3.5 system rather than BX. And to me, it's kind of trying to get the same OSR style without fully being built on the same framework as other OSR games. But I can also see the argument that it's way more the spirit of the game rather than the mechanics of the game.
To me, it honestly feels like something that's stuck in both worlds, because if you're playing 3.5 or later, or like Pathfinder or whatever, any modern tabletop game, you're going to be used to the D20 system, which is mostly what it uses. And then when you go back to OSR, you know, it's mostly like the D6 system, you know, 1 and 6, stuff like that. Like, yeah, sure, you have your D20, but, you know, they weren't as common back then, so they tended to rely on D6s a lot more.
Yeah.
Which generally just leads to, because you have less outcomes, you know, there's, like, less rules and more just imagination. And DCC, I feel, maybe kind of tones that down a bit too much and reins it in with, yeah, sure, they have all these branching paths with, like, their magic and stuff, but it is still very documented about, like, what you can do with this, what you can do with that, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it more goes into the, like I said, the spirit of OSR. It goes into the spirit of BNX and tries to get that, like, gonzo weird magic. You don't know ever what you're going to run into. And it tries to grab that way more than it tries to emulate the mechanics explicitly, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it, like you said, it feels like it fits in spirit more so than actual dice rolling.
Yeah. And also, this was a fantastic question, Rose. Thank you for that. And I want to remind everybody that you can email us, which is linked in our description, or you can send us a DM on any of our social medias if you have questions, and we will talk about them in our next episode. So speaking of our next episode, this Friday, when we put out this next one, going to be the three articles, Expose Your Prep, Why Setting High Stakes Matters, and my personal favorite title, What's the Deal with Igor's Hump?
That sounds like a very interesting article to read.
Yeah, it's a fun one. Knock One has some real bangers in it. So, unless you have anything else, I am going to let our listeners go until Friday.
Nope, I'm good. Have fun, listeners.
All right, have a good one, everybody.